Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show for all of you today. Kate Mendenhall will be joining me. She is the director of the Organic Farmers Association. And I'll be telling you more about her and her work in just a little bit. But first, I want to share with you some things going on in the news, some ways you can take action, and of course, share my recipe with you this week. First, I want to share with you that my local slow food chapter, along with NOFA New York and Deep Roots Farmers Market and the Sisters of St. Joseph, we're all working together to bring you the third annual Long Island CSA Fair, which will be March 26th with the rain date of March 27th. And as we've done for the last few years, we're bringing all of the farmers on Long Island together who offer CSA programs, so that you as consumers can come and meet the farmers, talk to them about their unique programs, and decide which CSA program is right for you. And CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture, and it's the best way, along with shopping at a farmer's market, to get local organic vegetables into your home at a fair price. And, you know, some of the CSAs offer full shares, some offer half shares as well. A half share can be either every other week or it can be half the amount every week. Some CSAs have drop-offs throughout the island. Some CSAs you have to go to the farm to pick it up. Some CSAs have add-on products like flowers, cheese, bread, eggs. Some even offer meat or fish or seafood. So you want to know that ahead of time and figure out which one is best for you. So save the date for March 26th, and we will look forward to seeing you there. Also, the Environmental Working Group came out with a home guide, a healthy living home guide, with tips on how to avoid chemicals in your home and building products, carpets, paint, and home furnishings. They actually, came out saying that the air in our homes can be 2 to 5 times more polluted than the air outside. And I know that's hard to believe, but with all the toxins, with all the cleaning products and everything we use in our house, and especially in the winter with our windows closed, it makes sense. So anyway, you might want to check out this guide. They also have a conference they put together that's online, and you can, it's free. I have the link on my website. It's called EWG's Clean Con 2021. And you can actually listen to these different experts talk about how you can get these cleaning products out of your home, but even better, which ones to choose so that you can just avoid them altogether. So that's really a helpful guide. And the Environmental Working Group is really one of those organizations that I recommend a lot. They have a lot of different guides. They are the ones that put out the Clean 15 and the Dirty Dozen list, which are the Dirty Dozen are the most important vegetables to make sure you buy organic, because they are the highest ones with pesticide. And then the Clean 15 are the ones that if you need to make a choice, do I get organic or not organic, and money is an issue and there's a difference, you can know that the Clean 15 guide is the safest choices. So that's all helpful to know. And then many of you, I'm sure, have heard about the situation going on with Northeast Organic Dairy Farmers. I've talked about it quite a bit over the last month or so, but Danon, which is the parent company, it's a French company, it's the parent company of Horizon, they canceled contracts of 89 small organic dairy farms in the Northeast. And this is the organic farms' livelihood. This is their key to everything. And just having a year notice does not really give them much time to really find new outlets for their milk. And it's really devastating. And on top of that, Maple Hill has also canceled 46 contracts. So together, there's like 135 farms that are at risk. And just this past week, Gary Hirschberg, who was the founder of Stonyfield, he's no longer the CEO, but he started a new initiative that is hopefully going to help save these 135 farms. And it's called the Northeast Organic Family Farm Partnership. And it was launched just this week. And it's a pledge, you know, it's asking consumers to make a pledge to purchase their dairy from 35 brands that have committed to buying milk from these 135 farms. So it only works if we can get consumers to participate. They're also, of course, asking buyers at retailers and institutions to also carry more organic milk from the Northeast. But the more signatures they have on this petition or this pledge, the more likely these other retailers and institutions will be to sign up because they'll see the commitment. So you can find these links on my website under Take Action, but please take a look at it. Our organic dairy farmers need your support. And as you know, as a vegan, I'm not promoting eating dairy or milk, but I am promoting supporting these organic farmers. So I know that everyone is not vegan. And so if you're not, and you do drink milk, please, please get your milk from the small organic dairy farmers in the Northeast. Also, I'm asking you to sign this pre-written customizable letter to your state legislators to get more funding for our farm to school programs. They're discussing this now. This is for the 2023 budget. And we want to get more support for farm to school programs. And as you know, I was the farm to school coordinator prior to COVID at Glen Cove Public School. I have now moved on. I'm working in a family business, but farm to school initiatives are so important. And the more money we can get in them, the more we can connect kids to where their food comes from. You can make changes in their health starting at an early age, and it's really crucial. So please take a look at that as well. I want to share with you this week my recipe. I got to make it recently because we had a couple birthdays this past week, but this is by far the best gluten-free carrot cake I have ever made, but also probably the best one I've ever eaten. You're going to start with free, and that doesn't matter to you. You can use either a whole wheat pastry flour or an unbleached organic white flour. But 3 cups of gluten-free flour, 1 cup of ground oat flour, and that I just make my own. I ground up my organic oats, gluten-free oats that I purchase, and I make a flour with that. 1 cup of ground coconut. Again, I take shredded coconut and I pulse it in the food processor so it becomes not smooth like a flour, but much more finer than just the shredded coconut. 4 teaspoons of cinnamon, 1 tablespoon baking soda, and 1 tablespoon baking powder. 1.5 teaspoons salt, 1 cup raisins, 2 cups walnuts, 1/2 cup of potato starch, 1/2 teaspoon of nutmeg, 1 cup of puffed millet or rice cereal. And that just helps give air to the carrot cake and keep it from being too dense. And it really works out great. 4 cups of shredded carrots, 2 cups of applesauce, 1.5 cups of maple syrup. You can use agave if you'd like, but I prefer maple syrup. 4 tablespoons of flaxseed dissolved in 1/4 cup of warm water. And that is what I use as my egg. 6 teaspoons of vanilla, 1.5 cups of oil, any type of mild oil, safflower oil, canola oil. If you're using canola, of course, you want to get organic. 1 tablespoon of apple cider vinegar and 1 can of organic crushed pineapple that you drain. And you mix the first 12 ingredients into a bowl, which are basically all the dry ingredients, except for the carrots. Mix the wet ingredients in another bowl. And then you're going to add them to the dry ingredients. Then lastly, mix in the carrots, bake at 350 for 40 minutes or until a knife comes out. And I'm realizing as I'm reading this that the directions are not completely clear. You do want to first, in a small bowl, take the flaxseed and dissolve it in 1/4 cup of water. And you can add the tablespoon of apple cider vinegar to that. Just let that sit for a while so it becomes more glutinous. And again, like I said, that becomes the vegan egg for this dish. And that's it. Bake it in an oven at 350 for 40 minutes. Depending on your oven, you may have to turn it halfway through. I usually have to. I don't have a convection oven. I have an old Garland, so the back is always hotter than the front. And so I always have to turn my stuff. So you know your oven. You might also need to cook it for a little longer, depending on your oven. But you'll know when you put the knife in it if it comes out clean. And that's it. I put it into one round cake pan. You can slice it down the middle horizontally to let it cool, and then you're going to frost it and have two layers that way. And so it's delicious. Enjoy it. And now it is my pleasure to introduce all of you to Kate Mendenhall. Kate is the director of the Organic Farmers Association, a national nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a strong and unified voice for domestic certified organic producers. Kate worked with Pesticide Action Network and QISA at the Ferry Plaza Farmers Market in San Francisco before traveling to the East to work with NOFA New York for a decade. The last 5 years, she was the executive director, and we missed each other. I'm on the board now, but I was not on the board while she was there, but I heard about Kate for so many years. And she now lives in her hometown in Okoboji, Iowa. Am I saying it right? She worked as the managing director for the Iowa Organic Association for 3 years while starting her own organic livestock farm. She continues to farm while leading Organic Farmers Association. Her nationwide experience and dedication to organic farmers throughout her career makes leading the Organic Farmers Association her dream job. And she is a fierce advocate for what organic farmers need and want from the ground up. Hi, Kate.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on the show.
Thank you for joining us, and thank you for your dedication to organics and your work. It is awesome. We need more people doing that, because organic is, you know, is the ticket to helping turn around this climate crisis and saving the planet. It's one of the main things. So I wanted to first, you know, I always like to ask my guests a little bit about your own personal history. How did you come to organics? Were you raised on an organic farm, or did you always know you wanted to follow that dream?
Yeah, no, it's, you know, I live in my hometown now in Northwest Iowa. We're surrounded by corn and beans, and unfortunately now a lot of hog confinement operations, but it wasn't always like that. And when I was a kid, I really grew up during the 1980s, which was sort of the heart of the farm crisis in the Midwest. And so I think that really affected me. The landscape around me was always production agriculture, and I love being outside in nature. But I was also affected by all of these farmers having to move off of their farms, watching smaller family farms consolidate and fall to the pressures of industrial agriculture because of this push to get big or get out. And that was very emotional for my town and for the state of Iowa and the whole Midwest. And I really felt that sort of depression around agriculture growing up. So there were a few small farms that were diversified around me growing up, and I was just really interested in what that was like. But there were no vegetable farms, so I didn't even really know what food production farms looked like, but I just knew I was really interested in that and wanted to, was curious about a different way of farming that would keep these families on their farms and that culture of small farms supporting rural economies. And I went to college in Maine and found all these amazing organic farmers growing food at the local farmers market and was just blown away. I was like, oh, I had no idea that organic farming even existed. And it was just such an eye-opening experience for me. I would go down to the farmers market and chat with the farmers about what they were growing and how they were farming organically. And it was such a great mix of my interest in ecology, in eating delicious food, in social justice, and nature. And so I just wanted to learn everything there was about organic farming. And I studied organic farming in graduate school. At that time, there were really no organic programs, and I did not want to go to sort of one of these new sustainable agriculture organic programs where the professors weren't totally on board with it. I didn't want to have to convince my professors that organic was the future. And so I designed my own program and I traveled to different countries and I learned from organic farmers while also volunteering on their farms, and was just so, I just learned so much about different kinds of production under different environmental circumstances, under different political pressures. But at the heart of it all, organic farmers are so similar no matter where they are, and they have such a love for growing healthy food, for taking care of the environment. And I just knew that this is where my heart was, and that our country and our world needs so much more organic production rooted in the values that we all want to see in our organic food when we bring it home. So I have, you know, this is where my passion is, and I want to help more and more farmers transition to organic and those organic farmers to thrive and connecting more consumers with this delicious food.
Mm-hmm. You know, what you're saying is so true. It's like, even though, like I said, I'm vegan, I'm still so totally committed to the community of organic farmers because they are of like mind. You know, even if our diets are different, the values of how you want the food for whoever is making that choice, you want it to be the purest, best, and consciously raised as possible, you know? And so, you know, it's a unifying thing, and it is really amazing, the farming community, the organic farming community. And especially, I have found, and you probably know better than me, that there's a sharing that goes on, you know, more than a competition, a competitiveness. You know, I don't feel that so much. In so many industries, it's really kind of cutthroat. You really feel like no one wants to give out their secrets because it's all competition. And I don't feel that, at least my experience. Again, I'm not, you know, a producer of organic food, really. I mean, I have my small organic teaching garden, but I don't, you know, it's not my livelihood. But it just seems to me like everyone wants to share their knowledge to make it better, and always trying to improve it and share their techniques. Is that what you find?
Yeah, it's really a supportive community. And I have heard that from many conventional farmers coming into organic and just sort of being blown away by the different spirit of sharing and shared growth and learning. And I think, you know, when the market starts to feel tight, some farmers start to feel nervous about market share, and then, you know, that sense of community can be tightened up a little bit. But I think that's just, you know, where my role comes in. There's so much potential for more domestic organic market growth, and so those places where farmers are starting to feel like the market's tight, we just need to learn, you know, look to grow, bring more consumers in, help build the infrastructure to grow organic production. This country could use so much more land in organic, and so the culture is really there to support growth and bringing in more community, and organizations like Organic Farmers Association help foster that.
Mm-hmm. So tell us some more about the Organic Farmers Association. What is their mission? How do you work? How do you bring people together?
Yeah, so we were started in 2016 to provide a strong and unified national voice for domestic certified organic producers. So before that time, through four iterations, farmers had tried to create a National Organic Farmers Association, but we didn't succeed until 2016. So it's something that farmers have felt the need for over the last four decades. And I'm really happy we were able to create a strong organization this time. I think the time was really right for farmers to come forward with a strong voice. We make sure that national farmer policy priorities are identified, that farmers are driving a strong voice for what they need, and then we make sure that those voices are represented in Washington, D.C. One of the unique things about Organic Farmers Association is that we were created by certified organic farmers, and we are controlled by certified organic farmers. So only certified organic farmers have a vote on our leadership teams, on our governing council and our policy committee. Only certified organic farmers have a vote on our policy positions. And we also bring certified organic farmers to Washington, D.C. On an annual basis for a lobby day. the last year, and this year will be virtual lobby days, unfortunately, because of the pandemic. But it is really important to make those connections with organic farmers and their elected representatives. And I think just keeping organic farmers at the root of what we're doing and bringing in those national voices together help make us stronger as a movement.
Mm-hmm. One thing I have learned since being at NOFA is that all certifiers are not created equal. And, you know, I know as a consumer, you know, when you buy something organic, you assume that it's all, you know, meeting the same organic standards. How do we know what products we can really trust as being certified to the highest standards? I know NOFA, people always recognize NOFA, those that know, as being a very good, legit certifier. But can, you know, the organic products that are at the big box stores, can we trust those? Are they, you know, equally organic?
Yeah, this is a tricky question. I mean, you're lucky in New York State that you have such a strong state certifier, and it's always best to buy local. So, you know, looking at the back of a package and seeing that NOFA New York certified organic is on that package is a great sign that you're buying a local product from a local certifier and supporting your local organic economy. All certifiers selling under the USDA organic label are supposed to be held to the same standards. And that's something that we are really pushing for. That's been the top priority of organic farmers for the past 4 years, that the National Organic Program at USDA is enforcing consistent, strong organic standards. And that is a role that they need to do a better job of, I would say. Their job is to accredit these different certifiers. And so that means that just like farms have an annual organic inspection, an inspector comes to your farm every year, make sure that you're following the organic standards, that what you submitted to your certifier is actually what's happening on the farm. That happens to certification agencies as well. Someone from the USDA comes and looks through the records and makes sure they're maintaining their policies according to the national standards uniformly across the country. But that accreditation process needs to be stronger. When certifiers are found not to be consistent with the standards, the USDA needs to take a stronger stance. Also, our country is so large compared to other countries around the globe, and our organic market is huge. The amount of funding within the USDA to support a growing organic market is not enough. We need to have more funding for enforcement within USDA and OP. It needs to grow along with the market. They could do a better job, and they need a lot more funding and resources to do the job well. So that anytime you look at an organic label in the US, it is upholding the values that we want to see in our food.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, like even the story that we were talking about earlier, or that I was talking about with the organic dairy farmers, right? It, you know, Dannon is going out west to purchase milk from these CAFO organic farms, right? Organic farms that are hard to believe are really maintaining the same standards, right? They have thousands of cows, you know, they, of course, even the where the cows were born is in question now. They can be born to an unorganic mom and instantly become organic. And, you know, I think so many of my listeners, you know, are on tight budgets and don't know the difference. And so, you know, you can go to Costco and buy 2 half gallons of organic milk, and understanding that that's not the same as organic milk that you might buy that's from the Northeast.
Yeah.
How do we get that message out to people? And is Organic Farming Association working on that, or that's just not your area?
Yeah, we've been working on it a lot. We've been working on pushing the USDA to tighten up the organic regulations around dairy ever since we started. The origin of livestock rule is now finally on its final way out the door. It's at the Office of Management and Budget right now at the President, or at the White House. So that should hopefully close some of these loopholes that's allowing these large CAFO dairies to operate in a way that's not under the same standards as these family scale dairies in the Northeast, which has been undermining their ability to succeed economically. So we're hoping that that will make some changes. There have been so many instances in the past where farmers have a problem and consumers and farmers working together have pushed through and forced the government to make a change. And so I think these places of organic standards where we're seeing the organic movement change, be industrialized, consumers have a really important role hand in hand with farmers to put pressure on the USDA not to let that happen. So we do vocalize that at the National Organic Standards Boards, which is a volunteer board of consumer advocates, farmers, processors that informs the USDA about organic standards. We were representing farmers, you know, more consumer voices at places like that, and just to your local representatives and senators, asking for stronger organic standards really does help. So there's a lot we can do. We are at Organic Farmers Association. We've been working by pulling together the organic producer organizations from across the Northeast who have been trying to support these organic dairy farmers who are losing their markets, who try to find different solutions. And I think one of the things we need to do as a region of the Northeast region, regions all across the country, and as a nation, is to build up our local food infrastructure. We were pressured so long to get rid of our local food infrastructure and consolidate, but now we need to go back to the way things were. That's part of the reason Dannon is using to say that they can't support these dairies from Maine and Vermont. The trucking costs and the distance is too far to their processing facility. But the Northeast needs its own processing facility that is state of the art, ready to serve the future needs of the region. And we've been pushing for the USDA to support building a processing facility like that, for Dannon to support some financial resources towards that, to support these farmers they're letting go. There's a, you know, I think a lot we can do, and hopefully as things begin to shape up, we're hoping to see some recommendations come back from the U.S. Department of Agriculture to help these organic dairy farmers, that we can put pressure together as a community to see the things come to fruition that are really going to help farmers.
Mm-hmm. That'd be great. So what are the primary things that Organic Farming Association is focusing on right now?
So right now, we are looking forward to the next Farm Bill. The next Farm Bill is scheduled to be written in 2023. So this is a year where a lot of Farm Bill policies will be drafted, and people will be giving input to their senators and representatives about what policies they want to see in the Farm Bill. Right now, we are doing a very grassroots process with farmers to find out what priorities they want to see in the Farm Bill, what sort of changes do they want to existing programs, and where do they want new programs to develop to serve organic farming for the next 5 years. So we have a few exciting things coming up. We're actually partnering with the Organic Trade Association, who's doing a large stakeholder inventory of Farm Bill priorities, but they are going to hold a farmer meeting. And so Organic Farmers Association has come in to make sure that that meeting happens in a very grassroots inclusive way. And we're hoping that through this, we'll be on the same page for some of the priorities that we're asking for in Washington, D.C. during this Farm Bill process. So there's three ways that farmers can participate in this Farm Bill priority development. We have a Farm Bill survey that farmers can fill out. We have, there's regional meetings happening across the country. So I think NOFA New York maybe recently held one. And then there's a national farmer meeting for organic farmers on March 2nd from 1 to 5 p.m. Eastern, where farmers can come and share their priorities for the Farm Bill. And all that information will be taken and we will come up with a report that details the highest priorities. So we're spending a lot of time on hearing from farmers about what they want in the Farm Bill. And then the rest of this year, we'll really put a lot of time in advocating for that to be incorporated in the Farm Bill draft that's happening. At the same time, we continue to watch organic regulations and standards development and weigh in on behalf of farmers. We're asking farmers in our sort of organizational annual policy process what their policy priorities are in general, not just around Farm Bill. And farmers submit policy proposals for us to review for our own organization policy proposals. So sometimes those won't necessarily fit into Farm Bill, but it's important to find out what farmers are seeing as a future need for their industry and community, and then farmers will vote on what policies we want to support as an organic farmer organization. So that's happening as well. And we continue to, you know, support farmer issues like the Northeast Organic Dairy Farmers, who are really stuck in this quandary for the next, I think they have we were able to get them an extension of their contracts till next February. So we have just a little over a year to hopefully find a new market for them.
Yeah, and that's not a lot of time, right? It's a lot of dairy, a lot of milk. Can we talk a little bit about the living wage issue and how that's affecting farmers? Because I know, all of us want everyone to make a living wage, but I know for small organic farmers who are really working, they're not the corporate farmers that we're talking about that live in penthouses in New York City. I'm talking about real small organic farmers who are, who are hiring farm workers. I have heard lots of talk about, how the overtime is really, becoming a financial burden to them if they have to pay the overtime, because very often, we know it's seasonal work, and there's long hours. You have weather issues, you have to make up for a rainy day, whatever. How are organic farmers dealing with the living wage issue and the raising of minimum wage and the time and a half, all those issues?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's arising in different conversations in different parts of the country. So Organic Farmers Association has not developed a policy specifically on the minimum wage overtime issue nationally. We haven't received policy proposals from farmers to review and discuss. Maybe we'll see that this year. I do think that organic farming at its heart has one of its principles for care. And so it's important to remember that, everyone deserves to earn a living wage, but it needs to go through the whole food system. So there's so many parts of our society, unfortunately, that are broken, that makes this like the one small problem about making ends meet on a small farm. It's indicative of a broken social system in general. So there's a lot of factors there, and I can't speak specifically on the New York issue because we're a national organization. But I do think that organic farmers want to make sure that their workers are taken care of and that they can pay them good livable wages, but also can get good livable wages themselves. So it has to go through the whole system, and we have to support, the whole chain, as well as recognizing these organic farmers for the environmental services that they're providing. It kind of circles back to it takes more labor to do this type of farming and to take care of your land so that you're preserving clean water and air, and they aren't being compensated for those environmental services. It's one of the things in the Farm Bill we're looking at as climate change is becoming more a part of the conversation. And environmental services are rising to the top of something that really is making a difference in slowing down climate change. And organic farmers have been doing that for decades. So how can we honor that work and compensate them for that work? And not just, put a Band-Aid on conventional farmers doing a couple quick changes to make it less worse. They're creating a lot of problems that we're taking care of with an expensive certification fee. So maybe we'll see some benefits come through some new federal policies around climate change that will, you know, tip the scales a little bit for farm finances from other areas that would allow some equity among labor.
Yeah, I think we also need to charge the industrial agricultural farming systems, charge them for cleaning up their mess. And then all of a sudden their products would not be so cheap if they had to incorporate the cost of cleaning up their environmental devastation that they're causing. Yes. And put that cost of that into the food that they're producing, all of a sudden organic would be cheaper, you know, but we don't do that. And a part of, you know, actually, I was surprised to hear that Organic Farming Association is actually partnering with the Organic Trade Association, because I've heard so many negative things about the Organic Trade Association over the years. And again, I don't know. It's only what I hear. I've never really had my own personal contact with them, but I've heard that you can't really trust them, that they, you know, that Monsanto likes people have infiltrated the Organic Trade Association. And anyway, what's your take on that? Is that, have I been misled, or is that true, or what's going on there?
This is the first farm bill that Organic Farmers Association has really been present and a strong organization. Typically, the Organic Trade Association is the strongest organic voice during farm bill creation. And so we felt that it was really important that if Organic Trade Association was soliciting farm bill input from farmers, that we wanted to make sure that it was representative of farmers, real organic farmers from across the country, not 50 OTA farmers that they were selecting. And I think, you know, they were really open to this collaboration. So we're trying it out, and we're hoping that if we can come forward into this farm bill with real, authentic, farmer-driven priorities that are informing the Organic Trade Association's farmer priorities, that would be a win-win. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we don't always agree on policies, Organic Farmers Association, Organic Trade Association, and I think that's to be expected. Processors and farmers just don't always agree on policies because they have different interests. Processors will want cheaper ingredients, and farmers want to be paid a fair wage for their products. And so there are times where we're not going to agree, but I do think that the organic movement as a whole will be stronger where we can find common ground and where we can advocate together, not just with Organic Trade Association, but with lots of the different organic groups nationally and at the state and local level, because our common enemies are so strong. And so we really do need to find a way to work together. There may be some new relationships that form, and we may, you know, it's going to have to be a navigation about where we can build trust. And it will be tested, I think, this farm bill, but I am hopeful that we will be able to find some common ground, build as a real progress that will benefit the movement as a whole.
That's exciting. I didn't realize this was the first farm bill that the Organic Farming Association is really going to be a part of. So that does give me hope. That's great. Where does the Organic Farmers Association, where are they in relation to the allowing of carrageenan, for instance, in organics? Because I know that's been a big issue. And again, it's, you know, it's the not real organic farmers that are still pushing for that carrageenan in their products. And where's the voice from the Organic Farming Association?
Yeah, so it's a good question. I know we have a lot of members that have been very vocal to prohibit carrageenan. It's not an issue that has come forward in a farmer proposal wanting Organic Farmers Association to take a stance. So that's not something we have taken a position on. There are so many organic materials and issues to work on, and we're national, but we're still kind of small and shoestring. And we've been around since late 2016, early 2017, but to start a new organization built from farmers nationally is tough. So we really try to keep our focus on the issues that organic farmers bring forward that are most crucial, most important. We have a great policy director and lobbyist in Washington, D.C., Patty Lavera, and she does an amazing job for us. But, you know, we don't have her full time. We don't have me full time. So there are issues that we just don't, unfortunately, get to touch on. But if we do start hearing from farmers on those issues, we, of course, bring them forward. And we support other organizations who have the capacity to put time into things like material review and really do the research on that. So where we see farmers aligning on a position, we'll speak up for them for sure.
So what do you see as some of the biggest challenges organic farmers will face in the next 5 years?
Yeah, I think that the Northeast Organic Dairy example is one that just reiterates the need for more local food infrastructure to support domestic organic market growth. And that is one thing farmers have said across the whole country is going to make the biggest impact on climate change as well. Keeping things local. We saw that in the pandemic. Organic farmers were so much more able to diversify their markets, to keep things local, to re-strategize what they were growing and re-strategize the way they are getting food to the people. They were able to do that because their markets were more local and regional based. And climate change will continue to be something we're living with, and we will have to make those sudden adjustments. And so we need the local infrastructure to better support small, local, regional farms that are more nimble and more able to respond to the food security needs of their local communities and regions. So that would be one thing that I think we need. There's also a lot of support from the current administration to support transition of more organic producers, which I think is great. We need a lot more acres in organic production. We have so many acres being polluted, and to have those transition to organic would be fantastic. And at the same time, we have to grow the domestic organic market to support those new producers coming in. So the local infrastructure just would support that hand in hand with more transition. Climate change is not going away. So we need more support for farmers in how to adapt their production and their markets to extreme weather. Perhaps some more support for recovery after a major weather event. We also need to look at climate change policies that support certified organic farmers for the environmental services that they are providing, and not pit them against conventional farmers that are making a few good changes that are making perhaps like a more immediate impact, but aren't necessarily the same type of long-term climate change farming practices that we need to see. So just making sure that organic farmers are not forgotten in this sudden interest in preventing climate change. They really are the ones who have been holding us up for decades. And when you do long soil cores, you see the amount of carbon sequestration they have doing that is deep in the soil and not just at the surface. They really have, we have a lot to learn from these longtime organic farmers, and we'll be pushing to make sure that is part of the conversation. Keeping organic enforcement high is something we really need to watch in the next 5 years, and that really affects farmers. Weakening the organic standards does not help farmers. It does not help organic consumers. And we need to, together as a community, put the pressure on to keep those organic standards high and true to the principles of organic. And then lastly, I think in the next 5 years, we're going to really unfortunately see a lot of pressure on produce farmers from an increase in certified organic hydroponic production. There's a lawsuit currently trying to make this not allowed, where hydroponic production would not be certified organic, but that is not, we don't see really any indication yet of that moving. And so currently there's a lot of new organic hydroponic operations popping up, and they are doing so without the 3-year transition that crop farmers have to do, soil farmers have to do, and economically it's going to make an impact on those farmers. So it's the same, it's the same need for equitable organic standards enforcement. We don't have any standards for organic hydroponic production, and that's going to be, I think, put some pressure on organic soil farmers that are doing all these other climate change friendly practices that we need as a society going forward.
Yeah, it seems to me hydroponic, and I know you probably agree, it's a whole different system. It's not organic. It's not building the soil. It's not, I mean, in the definition of organic is building the soil. So yeah, I just don't even understand how they can consider it organic and certify it organic. And there is a big movement that way. And I think, you know, I think hydroponics is great and has its place, you know, and I think most organic farmers would agree, you know, but it's different. So certify it as hydroponically grown without pesticides. You know, you can say that, but it's different than organic, and it's, it must be so frustrating. And, you know, and, you know, I can sympathize with organic farmers feeling threatened by it, because it's such a huge, there's so much money behind that, and people see that as the future, and that's where they're pouring money into, instead of the real organic farmers that are really taking care of the earth. So I know that's a problem. Can you share with us how you just started your, I don't know how recent you started your farm, but you did not, like you said, you did not grow up on a farm. So how has that changed your life, and how is that impacting your, or in informing your work right now, as now that you're an organic farmer yourself?
Yeah, I always wanted to be a farmer, even though I didn't grow up on a farm. But like I said, I grew up in the farm crisis. And so when I would tell people that, they were telling me that was a horrible idea. Don't go into farming. But I think that farmers are this nation's heroes. And so it was, you know, if I could someday become a farmer, that would just be so amazing. And it was really my time in New York State that inspired me to follow my dream. I kept watching these innovative young farmers leave Brooklyn, leave New York City, and start farms throughout New York State and be successful and be super innovative about new things they were bringing forward in markets and in production and the questions they were asking. And finally, I was like, well, if these Brooklynites can do it, surely this Iowa girl can figure it out. So it was always my dream to go back to my hometown and sort of open people's eyes to different ways of growing food and caring for the land. I live in a very important watershed. And so for me, I have a perennial pasture system. I raise animals on that perennial pasture, and I raise pastured pigs and chickens and turkeys. And I love being outside. I feel so fortunate to be able to farm and to provide my community with healthy food, and also present them with a different view for what farming can look like. Because people in my town and in Northwest Iowa, and we're actually a tourist area, so we get a lot of people from Omaha, Nebraska, and Minnesota, and all throughout Iowa, that they just don't see pigs outside anymore. And so reminding them that, you know, the food choices you're making are supporting different production systems, and you can raise meat in a very animal welfare friendly manner, and that our choices in the supermarket really have an impact on our environment and on our health. So I feel really fortunate to be farming. And I also have a small farm because I love my work at Organic Farmers Association. And it's just me farming. My husband has a different career, and so he helps with chores occasionally, but I had to, I've created my farm small so that I can manage it. My kids help a little bit. My dad's retired and he helps me a little bit. But I also really love the work that I do at Organic Farmers Association, and it's a really nice balance for me. Policy work is very long. It has a very long timeline, and you don't always see things turn around quickly that make you feel like you've succeeded. It's, it's a slow progress to succeeding. But on the farm, I see immediate response to my actions. And so it's a really nice balance to be inside using my brain on policy, but then outside using my body and my brain, but like all of my senses to really feel like I'm growing life and healthy food for my family and for my community.
So and how large is your farm? Like, how many animals do you have?
Yeah, so, I mean, I say that it's small because I live in Iowa. It's 17 and a half acres, all in perennial pasture. I have a bunch of fruit trees and nut trees growing that I've planted. I raise typically 12 pastured pigs and 300 to 350 meat birds a year and about 30 turkeys. And they're all rotationally grazed and, every few years we bring on something new. I have a small vegetable garden, but I'm really bad at growing vegetables. So my dream is to find another farmer who wants to manage an organic vegetable operation on my farm and work in partnership with me on that to bring organic vegetables to our community as well. Mm-hmm. And I think, going through, even though I've worked within the organic community for my whole career, being an organic farmer, being certified myself, it is hard work. It's stressful when the inspector comes to my farm. Right now I'm working on my certification paperwork for my 2022 application, and they ask a lot of questions and I have to have all my ducks in order. And I, as an organic farmer, I appreciate how rigorous the process is, and having gone through it as a beginning farmer, not from a farming background, I have a lot of, personal experience that I think I can bring forward into my work advocating for other organic farmers. And that is important to me. And I think it makes me a better advocate for them in Washington.
That's awesome. So what else do I want to ask you? Does the Organic Farming Association, I'm sorry, I keep saying the organic. I know it's just Organic Farming Association, but when it says organic, I always want to put the in front of it. I know that I'm not supposed to. Do you work with farmers in creating other like added value processes to their farm, finding other outlets for making a living wage, making their own living wage? Because I think the market is so tight. I think from what I've heard, coming up with the added value products is really a way that farmers can, and direct market can actually make a decent living, because it's hard to really encourage. I was on, looking at BIPOC farmers and, trying to encourage people to, leave the city and start a farm, but who wants to encourage someone to, to start a livelihood that's going to put them in debt and not make them any money, right? We're trying to lift them out of poverty or lift BIPOC people out of poverty. You don't want to give them a job that's going to put them right back into poverty. So, are there ways, are there lessons that you share with farmers to find other outlets for making money with their farm?
I mean, I think that state and regional organizations like NOFA New York are the best places for farmers to go. They really know their local markets. They really know their local, the local opportunities for value-added funding at the state level and what has worked at the federal level for that state. So we support those organic farm organizations to network among each other and to but our efforts are on federal policy. So we would advocate for federal policy to support more technical assistance for farmers that those organizations can use. Trying to put these organic farm organizations that are in tune with farmers at a funding priority level so that those funds will hit them. We advocate at the federal level for more local infrastructure, for example, to make it more possible for farmers to have more options for their markets. A lot of farmers don't want to do direct sales. They want to sell wholesale, but they have to aggregate their product. They have to present it in a way that the wholesale buyer wants to see it in. So we need more local support for those options. Yeah, so farmers can find the best fit for their skills and their talents and how they want to be structuring their business. So that's where we put our effort at the Organic Farmers Association, is at those federal policy levels. Also, you know, you brought up a huge point of land access. We need to make some changes as a country for climate change, and organic farming is, you know, gets all of the gold stars for it's also a market-driven solution. Farmers are choosing to farm organically. As long as the market can support more growth there, that's just a really easy place for our government to support growth in agriculture. But land access is huge. And so if we want to see more farms transition to organic production, because we want to see more of the environmental services that they provide, we have to support that. And we have to support it equitably across a diversity of farmers. And that doesn't come by just giving farmers access to land, which is a tricky nut to crack in itself, but farmers need technical assistance as well. And so there's a suite of services that that organizations like NOFA New York and other supportive organizations in other parts of the country need help farmers succeed, and to help them succeed by farming in a way that's caring for the earth.
Yeah. Wow, I could keep going on, but we are already out of time, and I know you have something you have to run to, so I don't want to keep you any longer. But Kate, thank you so much for joining me today and for your work at Organic Farmers Association. It's awesome. I'm so glad that you're going to be there with the Organic Trade Association talking about the farm bill, and maybe we can get a better farm bill on the table this time. So thank you again for your work. Good luck with your farm. And I look forward to meeting you sometime.
Thanks so much for the conversation. It was so nice to be here, and I'm excited to try your carrot cake.
Good, do it. It's really wonderful. All right, bye for now. Bye. Everyone who's joined us today, thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green, and I've been talking with Kate Mendenhall from Organic Farmers Association. Bye for now, and have a great rest of the week.